Welcome to the Lost Sorrow Podcast. This is your weekly podcast for movies, mostly. And for this week, something a little different. And joining me, as usual, is my co-host, Eric Sayor.
I can confirm I'm not a melon fucker.
It's good that you did that right out front, because there were some questions. God damn. That's a pretty good place to start.
And with me is Arden Harrow.
Yes, that is my name most of the time. Majority of the time. Yes.
If you have no idea what I'm talking about... maybe you just stumble on this episode and you haven't heard about Misfits.
Or you think we're talking about the band.
Yeah, maybe you're talking... Maybe that's what you think. Who knows if any Misfits band member is a melon fucker? Who can tell?
This is a mystery that we must explore in a separate episode.
So we decided to do like a... try to talk a bit about TV shows, and I chose the first season of Misfits because it's a show I really like, a show that's very that's not super popular in North America, and not even in the UK, I think, because it's on like, it's not a BBC show, it's like the channel 4, which means there are three channels bigger than it.
yes Mostly because of government mandates, but yes, this is true. It's not like Doctor Who, which is part of like an institution. It's the upstart, to say the least. It's the CW of England, which is fitting, I think, for this show. It's an interesting show. I'll start by saying that it's got a very, I don't even want to say it's got a British sense of humor.
Very crass sense of humor.
Yes, it's very crass.
But it's weird because it's not humor I like, but the comedic timing is so good that it's funny.
Yeah, and also I think there's a certain sense of like, oh, I know these people.
Yeah.
Like, and we're from as far away from there as we possibly could be, probably, but like, still, we both know our own versions of these people, and it just adds to how
like there's also, we can see ourselves in some of these characters.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, definitely. You definitely feel it. I think the show that this reminds me of the most that actually is a BBC show is Class, which is a Doctor Who spinoff, oddly enough. But like they both do something really interesting in that it's really based in character and character dynamics and how these characters interact with each other, and that's where the real strength of the show comes from. And the genre elements are kind of off to the side until they just like crash into the show, very violently and aggressively.
Yeah, I think it's. We were talking before the show started, and I think when I proposed this show, a lot of what I remember from the first season was actually from the second, because those first two seasons have that same cast of character. And then some leave and get replaced by also really good characters. But like those first two seasons are merged in my mind because they're only like 6 and 7 episodes each. Which means I probably saw them in like 2 days when I was in high school.
Right. Yeah, that totally makes sense. Like I couldn't tell you the difference between Luther season 1 and Luther season 2. Yeah. So It makes sense.
But we do get to talk like about some of those good, really, really good Charlemans in this show.
Mm-hmm.
Done with so much. I love the style of this show. Like, it's, you can see that the budget is really, really small. Not only in like the bad special effects, which are like predictable, and that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about more like it looks like it's shot on an iPhone 6.
Yeah, you can feel it kind of a little bit.
But that pilot especially doesn't look great, but it does improve. And what I can say is, like, having watched the five seasons of this show, by season 3 and 4, they're doing like very interesting visual episodes. And even that the time travel episode looks very different and very good.
Yeah, the time, I think that's a good place to start from, let's start from there. There's a time travel episode, which is the episode where I immediately was like, okay, I get why people might really, really like this. Like, I think that episode really, it's the sort of height of those first 6 episodes, as far as I'm concerned. It really gives you a sense of who these people are. And it's an episode that I could probably show to somebody who's never seen the show before, because it's just, these characters are so well written in that episode that you get who they, what their lives are outside of each other. And it's just like a really well shot episode, and it's very well constructed. And it's very emotionally interesting also.
And it does, like, a party club aesthetic super, super well. Like, the how it's lit, the music, man, that I love that song. Like, I knew that song before watching that episode for the first time. And I think just hearing it and how it fit perfectly, it made me just fall in love with the show the first time I watched it. Yeah. It's a Justice Phantom Part 2 Boys Noise Remix. I'm pretty sure. No, it's that. Hmm. Yeah, that's the song. It's a very good song, and a song I use. Like, I used to go to parties where that song was playing in 2009 and 2010, you know?
Interesting. This is a lot of insight into what Eric Sayor is like outside of the show.
I like electronic music, and I still go to a lot of electronic and techno music parties. So I think it just brings me to talk about the music in this show in general, because the music choice, the soundtrack is really, really good.
Yes.
And super diverse. Like, every song always fits what it's doing, and a lot of time it's also a character playing the actual song. I don't know how you call that.
Diegetic, I think that's the word.
A lot of it is just diegetic music, but always like good fit. Like, you know, you know, the people running this show, like, good, get like the same music I listen to, so I'll call it good music.
Right. Yeah, that's how we do this, Eric. Come on. your taste is the only taste that matters. But no, that's a good point. Like, the people who run the show, they have a very good sense of sound and how that affects the audience. And they don't pick songs that are manipulative, but as we talked about in our score episode, they pick songs that guide where you're supposed to be emotionally. But again, they do not force you to feel a certain thing. They simply lead you in the right direction of where you're supposed to be, feelings-wise. Which I think is a really smart choice.
Yeah. Like, a specific moment I remember that made me laugh a lot is at the end of, I think the second episode, where Nathan is sleeping with a woman who end up being an octogenarian, but gets the power of turning into herself when she was young. And at the end of the episode, they like see each other in the community center, and she looks at him lovingly, and he's disgusted, in part because, you know, he's an asshole, but also because the girl turned from being looking very attractive in her 20s to an octogenarian while they were having sex, which I kind of get the trauma.
Yeah.
But yeah, and the song playing is James Blunt's You're Beautiful, and it's perfect.
It's, yeah, it's so well timed. It's very well done. And that's a song that, like, it should only elicit, like, oh god, turn this off at this point in our lives, but it doesn't, because it just works so well in that scene. Yeah, that's a very interesting example to use. But yes, that's another episode I did actually really enjoy. I liked the whole thing about that. I think that episode goes to some interesting places. I think that, did we really explain the concept of the show?
I think we missed it.
Yeah.
I'll go. It's like, it's a five young delinquents that have to do community service. And mm-hmm. while they're doing community service, a storm hits. I think the show takes place in London. I'm not sure because it's probably like a suburb. It feels like a suburb.
Well, wherever it is, it's where they shot Clockwork Orange, clearly.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
At least similar estate houses, because, like, they even recreate a shot as they're walking by that body of water that dominates the show. I'm assuming. Okay.
So the storm hits, they each get powers that they discover throughout the season. Mm-hmm. Simon, and they're all like very different young delinquents from very different social groups. Mm-hmm. Like, none of them would have been friends without this event, even though they all were at the same night and that time travel episodes, which makes it all were in similar spots at that same night, which is totally believable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the way that they thread those characters together, it works. You believe that these people exist in the same town and that they've probably crossed each other's paths a number of times, but their lives are just so separate from each other that they haven't interacted really before. Yeah. In a meaningful way.
Yeah, I think the main strength of that show is those characters that you mm-hmm. get, and you're very... The season works really well for me because you by the end, you get all those characters like really well, and you like all of them, even if they're assholes or they're not good people most of the time. You still empathize with them, and because most of them... Like, most of the time, they're just trying to get through, and life can be shitty. And, like Nathan is an asshole almost to an unredeemable level.
To say the least.
But even him, his speech in the very end kind of is his most, like... He's very enjoyable to watch, and I think I liked him a lot more the first time I watched the show because I was like 17, and he's just an asshole making shitty sex jokes all the time, which sometimes are very, very funny. Go ahead.
I think the time travel episode does a lot to humanize him and to to make you understand him. It doesn't make it so that you can't really endorse all of the things that he says or does, but you get it, which helps quite a bit. And it recontextualizes everything that he's said before.
Yeah. And the episode with his mom also works mm-hmm. to that effect. And I think putting that episode second, like, the character that needed the most humanizing, I think, were him and Alicia by design. Yep. And mm-hmm. The show immediately, like, puts them in situations where they're like very not in their place and just humanizes them.
Yeah.
And it does so for like all the characters. And I think that's very much the strength of that season of the show. And after that, it can go in any direction, which it kind of does in that last episode.
Yeah, there are some shifts, and there are characters who your feelings about one character in particular really shifts from the beginning of the show to the end of this first season. And we'll go more into him, I guess, as we go on. But yeah, like you really gain different perspectives on all of these people. I feel like that's a good way to say it.
Yes. So I know where we're gonna. We didn't discuss. We didn't.
No, we didn't really discuss format. I mean, what I was thinking, because I don't episode to episode. I mean, I do that a lot, and it doesn't really work that well. But I think a good place to go is character by character.
Yes.
Maybe.
Yes.
And since we're kind of already talking about Nathan, I guess we can go into like. Really, I don't know. I guess we kind of have covered Nathan, really. Unless there's a last thing about Nathan you wanted to say.
I like a lot that scene with his dad, where he just hates him. He has no respect and no care for him at that point in the show. And his dad comes to bail him out, and he'd rather do community service than take money from his dad. And I think that's a very important part of his character is like he in the end he begs his friends for help, he begs the other kids for help, but he never take anything from his dad. He'd rather get arrested.
It's an interesting there's an interesting bit of insight that we get from that about sort of how his relationship with his father, or what the relationship really is, and that it's one where he just has no interest in even trying to, I guess, be, or he has no interest in being sensible with his father, which sort of gives you, it just gives you a lot of insight into who he is and what his mindset is. About people and where, and just how much what his father did when he was younger by leaving his mom, how much that affected him. I think that's kind of what we really need to say about Nathan, other than sort of by the end of the show, we really see that he does have an overriding morality to him, kind of, which is that it's all about freedom, like it's all about free will, and that like you should be allowed to be who you are and not have to change, I guess, and that's where his real morality comes in. He may not be outwardly morally right in the ways that we might think of, but he does have a backbone in a way.
He in the end he chooses to help instead of leaving, because even him ended up liking these people.
He's even like, I kind of like your makeup more now, but this isn't you, which is a great moment.
Yeah.
But he's like, but I liked the way that you were. I liked who you were, even if you did look kind of bad. But I really enjoyed that about his character, that it's much more about who someone should be, and
and the reveal at the end of his power is very good.
It's very well done, it's just such a great way of doing it. It's like, well, he finds out he's not dying, or he's immortal, as he's sitting in a coffin 6 feet under. And
no surprise, he's back in the second season, and they
right.
play that power a lot in, like, some very good ways.
I can't wait, actually. Like, I didn't want to just immediately start, but I was like, yeah. I'll say things from season two that didn't happen in season one. I just know myself. But yeah, like, it's a great way to sort of put a button on that character.
Yeah.
And it'll go on with him. I do want to talk about his mother a little bit and her boyfriend, and then I think we can move on from him.
First, I was just going to ask, how funny did you find him? Like, a bit, a lot, not at all.
I found him mildly funny in the first few episodes. Like you said, when you were 17, you found him really funny.
Yeah.
I think when I was 17, I would have found him very funny. I found him to be far more funny after the time travel episode, after I empathized with the character a little bit more.
Yeah.
And his jokes just became more grounded, I guess. Like,
yeah,
a little bit less ridiculous.
Like, a lot of it is just, like I said before, just good comedic timing in the directing.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, just the right moment to land that punchline. And even after you laugh, you're like, oh, shit, that wasn't really a good joke. But mm-hmm. it just, the build-up to it and just seeing it. Like, when they're doing interviews in the office in the community yeah. center, he just walks in the background and he's just like doing fuck yous or licking like a chair like it's a pussy or something. It's just very funny. The tone of that scene and just him in the background, he's the good comedic relief for that particular show. Like, he works very well as that.
Mm-hmm. And him and Simon is such a great straight man also. Yeah. Like, the two of them, they're great together in scenes. But yeah, like, he's very funny in moments like that. And even like moments where he's what's her name, Kelly, when him and Kelly are just eating pizza and she finds his sock.
And he just explains to her how it happens when he masturbates, and it's very, like, logical, a scene, and she's like, oh, all right, I get it.
Yeah, it's pretty great. But, yeah, it really works. Anyways, it's very, like, it's bound in reality and how people act and what they do in a given situation. He became funnier as he went on. I thought that the relationship with his mom was also very real, and I think that helped also. That helped me empathize with him and understand his point of view. And I thought that the whole idea of his father being a weredog, or his stepfather being a weredog, that was such a... the metaphor of that, of most people... or a lot of people don't get along with their stepfathers, and making the stepfather a weredog just makes it that much easier for the Nathan character to explain away his not liking his stepfather. It allows him to create an extra inch of separation and not, you know, forcing himself to grow up a little bit and just deal with the fact that his mom is with somebody else.
I think that moment he could be happy. Where she's like, I already know, is very, very good. It's such a everything the episode is being towards, it's just destroyed, and he doesn't know what to do at this point.
Yeah, it's really great, and it's really, like, kind of beautiful when he's like, okay, he grows up a little bit. And that did help. That made me like the character quite a bit more. So that was something.
And, like, the last thing I'll say is that I'm very surprised Robert Sheehan hasn't been in more things. Because he has, like, he has so much charisma in Misfits. And he hasn't been in a lot of stuff since. Like, nothing big. Like, he was in... he was in an, another he was another one of those guys that were in a bad young adult series of film that didn't land anywhere.
Yeah, he's been in a few of those type of things. Like, he was in
Season of the Witch featuring Nick Cage.
Oh my. Oh no. Some bad choices in there. And now he's going to be in Mortal Engines, which. Okay. I hope that's good. He was in Geostorm. He's just. He's making good choices, to say the least.
I thought Mortal Engines was the Peter Jackson thing.
Yes, that's coming out. Yeah, and he was in Bad Samaritan, which apparently was bad.
It's not directed by Peter Jackson? That's weird.
No, it's produced by him.
It's directed by... It's his like second unit guy, like first film.
Right. It's his next whatever his face is, guy who did Elysium and Chappie and District 9. Anyways, that's a little mini tangent, but yeah, like Robert Sheehan, I agree, he should have been in more things.
But I think he's the star of that, so hopefully that goes well.
Mm-hmm.
Like one of
And I will say this. From just the little bits and pieces I've seen of him and other things, he's not just doing Nathan over and over again, which is good. That's a credit to him, I guess, is that like people have understood that he has range and that he can do other things. So I got to give him credit for that, and casting directors and writers and so on and so forth. He is going to be in an umbrella The Umbrella Academy, which I've heard good things about that book. I'm interested to see what Netflix does with it, though. That'll be interesting.
He was nominated for the BAFTA for that role, so...
Okay.
Like Misfits was very well received, surprisingly, when it came out. Like, even... let's move on to Kelly, but I think she won a BAFTA...
I wouldn't be surprised.
For that show.
Oh, she did. Yeah. She won a BAFTA. That's kind of great, actually.
Yeah.
Kelly's a good place to go from because her story in that first season is also, I think it's really interesting. There's not as much there as some of these other characters. But you kind of go from thinking that she's kind of like a trashy person. And that's about as much as you can say about her. But you get something more from her as the show goes on.
She becomes the rock of the show. Like, she's the most grounded character, the most, like, real feeling, the one that would be, like, your friend. And because she's mostly a good person with kind of rage issues, but, like, she always tries to... do kind of the right thing and protect the other guys, protect the other ones. She's the one that kills the probation worker in the first episode and saves them all.
Yeah, she definitely is the most, she's the most outwardly looking out for other people throughout the show. Maybe her and Simon, at least at first. But yeah, like she comes from kind of a bad neighborhood, you know, or whatever, but she's just kind of got a heart of gold, which really serves these characters. And I think that she kind of rubs off on all of them throughout the show.
Like, she feels like she's friends with all of them. Like, they all have a good relationship with her. She's the center of that group without really being the center of attention, which is really easy to empathize with. And I think, like, the arc of us discovering her is very good without having to fall into, like, without being an arc actually about her. And I make, like, I want, it makes you want more of her, and you do get some eventually.
Yeah. I guess the other part of her thing is her and Nathan kind of get, I don't want to say, I want to, yeah, close. They get close throughout the show. Like, she's a big part of him sort of opening up, and she plays a big part in him starting to become more empathetic, and she really, she humanizes him in a number of ways. Yeah, that's the best way I can sort of describe it.
Yeah, I don't feel like there's much more to...
Yeah.
She broke up with her fiancé by reading his mind, and he was thinking, like, some shitty stuff about her, and then she never saw him again. And I think that's her character very well, summed up. Like, she's just... Okay, she takes a decision, she's very, not... prideful, maybe, about her decisions.
Yeah. Yeah, I think to go much farther is to just start repeating her jokes, which is not something that I want to do, but I do want to point out, I do like the flashback episode and the joke where he proposes to her, and she's like, that's so fucking romantic, and after he's stolen this ring, it's just on a whim, but yeah, like, so yeah, I think that's good with Kelly, I guess. Yeah.
Her strength is just she's very understandable and likable, just in general.
Yeah. I agree. let's see. Maybe let's do Curtis and Alicia as a pair, because that's... I think that they're not that interesting on their own, necessarily, and I honestly can't remember much of Alicia's story not connected to Curtis, so...
Yeah. I love every time Alicia just acts out a sexual event that happened to like one of her friends or people she knew, because it's always very detailed and very mesmerizing, both as an audience member and as a character, and it always goes on for way too long enough to realize, what the fuck am I watching?
Yeah, there are a couple of moments that are a little bit odd.
The cock-sucking one is good, but kind of not the best, but the stick shift.
Stick shift is the best thing ever, because...
The stick shift is like the funniest moment of the show.
It's so good. It follows an essential rule of comedy, which is, okay, you go so far, it's funny. You do it again, it's not funny. You keep on going, it becomes funny again.
Yeah, exactly.
And it just keeps on going. It becomes agonizing and then just hilarious all over again. But yeah, that moment's so good. And she has a lot of... I think she has a lot of some of the more underrated comedic moments. Again, we just don't want to... I don't want to just start repeating them, because that's not good podcasting. But just, some of the funniest moments are totally from her, and her reactions to situations. Yeah.
And I don't know. The show makes her out a bit to be... I kind of not sure about her episode, the episode where she just fucks everyone.
That's an accurate description.
And then,
I think the exploration of her powers is interesting.
Yeah.
Because it's one of those things where it's like, that's a power that can become very annoying very quickly, and it adds so many challenges to having a relationship with somebody.
But I love how that relationship is presented as like very healthy, even though they're just not having sex with each other. They're just like not. They're having like sexual. They have a sexual relationship without sex, and it still feels healthy. It's never like making fun of them, except when another character is making fun of them. But he's right. just an asshole, so that's not.
So, you can like make fun of them, part of it. But not make fun of them. Yeah. It's really interesting, and they have an authentic connection also, and the sort of the depiction of a connection that is stronger than just physical attraction is something that's captured really well in those sequences where they're just staring at each other and going through the motions. Let's say. Yeah.
And it's all like face acting, and it's very good face acting.
Yeah. And I like the way, I even like the way that, you know, they're showing the difference between her and him and what it is that gets them off, I guess, is the best way to say it. And he's making eye contact, but at the same time, he's really looking at her body, and she is really just focused on his face, which is something that's, it's a small little detail, but it added to the reality of the situation, I guess. That's a little interesting thing.
I wasn't a fan of him not being able to break up with his ex.
Well, I didn't get it till very late in the episode that the idea was that he just kept on restarting time accidentally. Yeah. Which made it more believable, I guess. But also, like, maybe just run away before the emotions can hit you and your brain can rewind things. I don't know.
I like how he does it in the end.
Yeah.
You're breaking up with me with a Spider-Man quote.
Is that from Spider-Man? And then he asks him, I don't know where I get this shit.
It just felt like a cool thing to say. And that feels like so honest to Nathan's character.
It's like, okay, you saw that movie and that you thought of that line, but you couldn't remember what it was from. Like, come on, be real. It's so good though. And it really works. And I remember thinking, I know that line. Oh, that's why she's going to figure it out in the movie. And when she figures it out, the moment of realization on her face, that's just golden. It's so good. Because you realize what's going on before she even says anything. It's just really well done.
Yeah. Let's, I think, move on to Simon, the last character. That's the main
character. Yeah.
Simon is he's played by Ewan Reom. I don't know how.
Yeah. He's probably the most well-known of these people. Maybe if you see this, you'll be like, where do I recognize Lauren Suchka from? Her brother is in Being Human, and they are like twins. Like, identical twins. So if you're like, I know her from somewhere, it's because you watched Being Human, and he's in, like, a majority of that show. So, yeah, that's probably why. But Ewan Reom's probably the biggest find from the show, other than Joseph Gilgan, maybe? Possibly? Yeah.
who? I'm sorry.
You've never seen Preacher, have you?
No.
Joseph Gilgan plays Rudy.
Okay.
Rudy Wade. He's in third.
Oh yeah. Okay. Rudy. And fifth season. Yeah, yeah. Rudy is. He's like. That's Future Show, but he's Nathan's replacement basically because
the actor leaves
the show after the second season, and he comes on and he. It takes a while to get into him, but when it gets really going, he's even better. I think he's funnier. He's a very complex character, and I think I think that show very, very much improves as it goes on, because it can do weirder and weirder things until the end.
Right. Okay. That's interesting. I'm curious to see how that plays out. Yeah. Ian Rayon's definitely the biggest name to come out of this, because Game of Thrones and what was his name? I've already forgotten his name.
Ramsay Bolton.
Yes, Ramsay. He was replaced by whatever the fuck his name was, the guy from the sea. Game of Thrones and your bad names, except for John. He's great in the show, though. Simon, he's such a quiet, unassuming character at the beginning. And even though I went in with some expectations because of what Ian Rayon's played before, I was immediately disarmed by the Simon character and just how simply he dresses and how just, you know, seemingly nice he is. And I was definitely fooled.
And what I'll say is that he becomes the most interesting character on that show. And I'll not say more. I'll let you watch it, and maybe we'll come back and do like an episode when we'll have watched everything, because it goes places.
I'm interested, because as someone who's like recently, I mean, I've always sort of had an interest in like serial killers and, you know, the signs that make someone a serial killer. Episodes at the end of the season immediately ticked boxes in my head, and I was like, oh, I think I know where they're going. So I'm very curious to see where they take this and how things move forward. But he's just, even with these six episodes, he's a very interesting character.
I think he has the most regretful line, I feel like, on that show. Is, I feel like, a line that doesn't fit his characters and demeans him immediately at the beginning. And it's like when Alicia touches him and he says, like, I want to piss on your tits or something like that. And it's like, I wish that line wasn't in that show.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't fit everything his character becomes, I feel like.
But maybe
that's like a kink, and I don't want to kink shame a character in a fake TV show.
Well, I mean, so again, with the whole ticking boxes on serial killer things, that feels like an intentional choice of like, it's interesting that that's the line that he says. I think I see where you're coming from on that line, not maybe holding up the best.
But he does have like a very strong character moments, like everything while he thinks he's dating the worker, the
The replacement for Tony. What is it? What's her name? Sally?
Yeah, every scene where he's dating Sally is like him feeling so earnest and giddy, and going from that to don't fuck with me and my friends.
He has an arc, definitely, and where it goes is very interesting. And I there's an episode where some of it he's just watching Sally while he's invisible, because that's his power. It's very sad, and it's a little bit melancholy, to say the least. And it sort of goes into these interesting places with him sort of watching her, and their sort of connection that is both sweet but at the same time intentionally kind of fake, and her sort of using this online identity to sort of fish information out of him, so that she can form a stronger bond with him as his probation worker. It just goes in some very dark places.
The one thing I'll say on that is probably no 18-year-old in 2009 would have fallen for a shy girl 18, and that's probably just comes from the director being like 10 years older than that and being like and watching right. some new stuff. Because mm-hmm. the show is so good at portraying young character in their teenage years that feel like real, very authentic, and I think that's why that show is so loved, is that it does feel authentic in a way a lot of TV shows about teen just isn't. It's just like you watch a CW show and none of these characters feel like people.
Kind of. When they're at their worst. When they're at their worst, they sometimes don't feel real. Like they feel like constructs of what a teenager might be like, or what you might think that they might be like. And I think that the show, it really nails it, even if it is 10 years old at this point. It's interesting because were they on MySpace, or was it MySpace-ish? Because MySpace did still exist at this point. I know because I was on it, but...
No, it looks like a fake thing that's just like a cross between that and Facebook. It looks maybe 2009 Facebook-y. I don't remember what Facebook like in 2009.
Yeah, I don't think I was on it in 2009. That's why my immediate headspace is Facebook. MySpace.
I got on... I never got the MySpace. I got on in 2006 or 7.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. there's a divide between the two of us. I was on MySpace for 2 years, and then I moved to Facebook
because everybody else did. It's just a weird Quebec thing because no one here was on MySpace when I was the MySpace age, and like no one is on Twitter now. Like no one I've ever met almost uses Twitter.
That's kind of fascinating, actually. That's interesting sociological things that can be said there.
So it kind of feels like old Facebook when they just introduced messaging, or maybe it's just a fake thing they use on TV shows, you know?
Mm-hmm. Probably. But it does get to the point of like, okay, anonymous messaging, which was, I guess it was still a thing because To Catch a Predator wasn't, I guess, what it is, what it became at the time. I don't know. Maybe it wasn't even a thing in England. It's interesting. I do think that you're right, that part wouldn't hold up. Like, in a world where Catfish exists as a documentary and as a TV show, I don't think anybody would be fooled by Shy Girl 18. Anyways, I think that was the point of that tangent.
Overall thoughts, maybe?
Overall thoughts on the show, I think it's a show that definitely grows on you as it goes along. And I said this pre-show, I don't know if I actually said it on here. It's a show that gets better after the time travel episode. And I think the time travel episode is just the real turning point. And if this was a 13 episode season, or a longer season anyway, that's the episode where I really would have been like, okay, I need to watch all of this season because it's going places here and it's really turning. It's a strong show, and if anybody tries to watch it and they're like, I don't know about this, just get past the time travel episode, and I think you'll have a really fun time with it.
Yeah, and I think like those first two seasons together really fit as... In my head, they're like one season because it very short season like this. It felt more like that first half is like a test case, and then the sixth episode, which we didn't talk about, I want to let's maybe end on that after... in a couple of minutes, but it gets to the point where it wants to be, and then it goes very much further than that. It gets into it becomes more of a kind of monster of the week thing, but the character growth is very linear. It's right. It doesn't, because it's only the whole season and only 7 episodes, and they very much happen one after the other. And what happened in the previous one always leaves effect on leaves a trace on the characters in the next. So it manages to kind of do that monster of the week thing with meeting people with more cool powers, very right. different powers. Like if you haven't seen the show and you want to see a guy whose power is to control milk, I think it's halfway through the second season and it's one of the best episodes of the show.
I really need to watch more of this show because that's just great.
I wanted to end on talking about that last episode because I feel like I like it a lot that it has like a villain.
Mm-hmm. It's the first one with really like a villain or just like a person who's really just like has their own agenda that's separate from the main characters. Yeah. Really.
And a person that's very much like them, just a young teenager that got a power and a young teenager that was like visibly kind of, like she knew Alicia and they were like in the same ish social circle. So yeah. It just could have been those two roles switched, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting what they do with that character. Who I believe, what was she? I think she was in Doctor Who. I mean, it's England, so she could have been in any number of things. Oh, it's okay. I'm Black Mirror. That's what I was remembering her from. She's from 50 Million Merits. If you haven't seen that, that might be another one that we review at some point because
I haven't that show. Seen any episode of Black Mirror.
Okay, I'm revoking my previous suggestions of what you should watch, and you're watching Black Mirror now. I'm making this call now.
No, the decision is taken.
Yes, I've made it for you. We could watch those other shows later, but you're watching first 2 seasons of Black Mirror because they're about 6 episodes. Interesting. But yeah, no, she's great, and like her character motivations are very like real. Like I was made fun of for being a virgin, which is something that I feel like a lot of people who are still virgins probably relate to. They probably are very hurt by it, and it's just a very real human reaction, and she uses it to justify, you know, making other people do her bidding or do as her will wants. And it's just she's a very complex character, even though she doesn't have a lot of screen time.
Yeah, no, she's good as a villain. I like when she realizes the gun is fake.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, what the fuck are you doing?
I love it. You get the sense of like, oh, she's the good girl, but she's maybe not quite as much of the good girl as we think she is. Yeah, it's interesting the way that she's used throughout the show. And she's just like, she's kind of creepy and off-putting when she does her whole hypnotism thing.
Yeah.
I
really wanted a scene. I think I made up that scene in my mind, but I thought I remember that she tries to do it on Nathan and it doesn't work because he's too much of an asshole. But I think I took that from another show. I was sure that scene was going to happen. But that's just the fake scene I invented in my head.
I was kind of feeling like I thought that was going to be his power, that he's just immune to other people's powers in some way, which isn't that far, it isn't that crazy of a thing that could have happened.
Yeah, but Kelly does read his mind.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, like,
yeah.
It's interesting, but I even like the solution of the music, and I like they're like, can you just pick a song already? And he's like, that was really good, and I like that they each have their own songs, and that sort of gives you a sense of who you're following in that scene. Again, like the music is just so well handled throughout the show.
And when Nathan comes back, it's just Frank Sinatra playing.
It's very good, and he's really believable when he's like pretending to be brainwashed. It's really well done. I feel like I guess we should go to when he doesn't really sacrifice himself so much as he, like, I don't know how to describe it. To the characters, to everybody else around him, they see him as a sacrifice, it seems. And he does something that's pretty noble in, you know, trying to save the day, I guess.
Yeah, he comes back for the sole purpose of trying to save his friends, making them go back to what they were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he succeeds by being dragged down the roof and dying and resurrecting on the third day like Jesus.
That's a good point.
I don't actively remember them, but I'm pretty sure we're gonna get a bunch of Jesus jokes in the first episode of the second season.
I'm looking forward to it. I would expect no less from this show.
Maybe the last thing I want to say on their powers is that all their powers are very, very, very much fit their characters.
Mm-hmm.
Kelly, like we said, is a very empathetic characters and can read minds, which fits. Like, Simon always felt invisible, and now he just is invisible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Curtis is haunted by the mistake he made and has that newspaper next to his bed of him being banned of the Olympics and just want to change the past so he can go back in time. And Alicia likes sex, so she can have sex with anyone she wants, which, right. I don't know about that one, but...
Well, I'll do that one for you. She is lusted over, and her power is for people to lust after her. So, she's kind of treated like a sex object in the first episode. Or at least that's what we're supposed to think of her as a person who really has no value outside of that, maybe. And that is sort of explored throughout the show.
It does feel like a bit misogynic about how it only took the right guy to make her stop having sex with everyone. And I don't know about that. Yeah, but... I think her character is good enough on her own that mm-hmm. it can pass, but it still feels like a bit like the result of it being a man writing and directing those episodes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's also that's a good point. Like it could be handled better, to say the least. But I do think that at the same time, I don't think Curtis was necessarily I don't think he was completely faithful before he met her necessarily. Maybe that's just me reading into things, but the way I think of that character is he was not necessarily he wasn't someone that was saving himself for a certain person, to say the least. Maybe I'm just maybe off base there.
No, I get what you're saying.
Yeah. I think that's a good place to end, other than saying I'm very glad by the end of this that you picked this, because I think it's an interesting show to talk about, at the least.
Yeah. And the first season is very messy, and I kind of like that about it. Even though it wasn't the show at its full potential, it still has very interesting episodes idea, and it does those ideas well.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that.
That's it. Misfits is a very good show, and if you've only seen the first season, like Arden here, do try like a couple of episodes of the second season, because it does the quality definitely improves. It shows that it's someone show running his second season instead of his first.
Yeah, I will. I will. I am very interested to see it. Yeah. I guess
maybe next time we do an episode on something else, we'll have a small Misfits bit at the end. But we can do plugs. I'll start because mine is very quick. I'm at Isir on Twitter. I still review every film I watch for the first time, and I try to keep up to date on those, but sometimes it takes me a week to think about a good tweet review. And when you want to say something smart, sometimes you just don't take the time. So,
yeah.
So, and my recommendation for this week is, you know what? Just drink more water.
That's a good suggestion, and I back that up. Phantom Zone podcast every week, multiple times a week. Sometimes we just finished up Luke Cage, which felt like it took forever because it did. But roll with the punches. Two After Darks also. So again, After Darks movie specials. If you're like, I haven't listened to this and I want to. That's where I suggest you go to. Last two After Darks have some technical issues, so be aware of that. My audio cuts out at a couple places. Also, we switched websites and hosting to anchor.fm/PhantomZonePod, partially because Anchor has a deal with Spotify to get podcasts on there. Go check us out on Anchor, guys, and subscribe on whatever app or, you know, thing that you listen to podcasts through. Of course, go to the YouTube channel, please. We want a custom YouTube name. So, yeah. Yay! I think that's the show. Yeah.
Goodbye!
Bye!
Fuck for a memory. Come and see it by me, no, I won't.